mind. Hold on. Create ether? I jumped on Donovan's statement. You can do that? Donovan nodded intently. Certainly. Almost any mage could if they had enough power. What do you mean, power? Well, as I'm sure you are aware, ether is intensely concentrated mana, Donovan began to explain. If a mage is able to capture and harness enough mana, it can then be distilled into a liquid form. How much mana would it take to create ether? I pressed out of curiosity. If it's that rare... There is no easy comparison, Donovan shook his head as he tried to find a way to explain. It would take at least as many motes of mana to create a liter of ether as it would copper coins to equal a single platinum coin. At least 10,000 points of mana, making the mental conversion in my head. If ether is so rare in Iberia, then I take that it has no ley line then? No, it does not, Donovan said after a moment. And that is most unnatural. There is a prevailing theory that something has damaged or redirected the natural ley line system that spans across the continent.
Like an explosion at Crater Lake? The thought crossed my mind. Leaving Iberia dry in a magical sense, I finished, receiving a nod from Donovan. Now I understand why they were looking for that ley line. We both fell silent, looking up towards the tree.
Lyrian, Donovan spoke after a moment. I would ask your permission to study this oak in more detail. Last night, Natasha told me she managed to rescue a pack when she fled our camp. When I looked inside this morning, I found that it contained a handful of arcane tools, including an etherscope and a magosphere. I would appreciate the opportunity to get a better understanding of how the ether is integrating with the tree. This is an unparalleled opportunity.
I crooked an eyebrow at the mage in surprise. Sure? Just don't hurt the tree. If we could also have a copy of your results?
Of course!
Donovan said enthusiastically, starting to inch his way back to the town hall.
Thank you, Lyrian. I'm eager to get started on it right away.
Let me know what you find, I called out at the departing mage's back. At least he'll be out of trouble for the day. Grabbing the box once again, I set off towards the fire pit, which was also conveniently near the yard where the militia was drilling. Seems like Caius is getting more than he bargained for. I saw the spindly half-dark elf surrounded by four members of the militia, each taking turns to attack him with their spears. In his hands he twirled a practice staff, methodically batting the attacks out of the way. But he's learning quickly, and will probably need to apply a few levels worth of points into strength and agility. Continuing to watch Caius fight, I tossed the chitin into the fire pit without any ceremony, happy to be rid of the mess. Someone would light a fire at some point during the day to burn any other garbage that was collected.
Oh, Lyrian!
I heard the Bond's voice shout out. Turning, I saw Alduin waving me over to the militia yard where the whole group, along with Caius, had just taken a break from their training.
I had heard that Caius volunteered to put himself under your tender clutches, I said with a smile as I stepped out onto the yard. So I figured to stop by to make sure I was going to be getting my warlock back in one piece.
Ah, he's doing fine, Alduin exclaimed with a laugh. He's a natural with the staff, and with a little bit more conditioning and practice, he'll be able to knock you down without breaking a sweat.
That's great news, I replied, nodding happily at Alduin and the sweat-drenched Caius that had gingerly walked over. How are you making out, Caius?
Everything hurts, and I want to die, Caius gasped as sweat continued to pour down his face. But it's something I need to do.
Oh? I asked with curiosity. What's on your mind?
I had a hard time yesterday, Caius said slowly as he sucked in air. Especially with landing a touch on a creature. And I don't really have a fancy shield like Halcyon to hide behind if things get rough.
I nodded in understanding. You want to be able to keep up?
Yeah, I just feel like I've been scrambling up to this point, Caius replied with a sigh. Making great progress so far, but I'm hoping to pick up on some more unarmed skills as well. Alduin is just teaching me everything as it comes.
Best way to do it, I said in full agreement.
Are you off to dig, Lyrian?
Alduin asked, indicating the neatly measured section Rit had staked out before Jenkins's wrath caught up to him. Not yet,
I shook my head, indicating the direction of the workshop. Just felt a little cooped up in the workshop, so I decided to stretch my legs and throw some scraps in the fire pit. I'm headed back to make some triboli for the other ditch still.
Ah, Alduin said with a nod. We'll be drilling a bit longer. Then it'll be off to digging for us. Speaking of which, we best get back. Muscles don't earn themselves, after all.
They sure don't, I agreed, waving goodbye to the group.
Have fun, Caius.
The rest of the morning for me was a blur of wood and sawdust as I sat in the workshop with Jenkins crafting triboli after triboli. I lost count of how many I made over the course of the day, losing myself in the simple yet rewarding task. There was a steady stream of villagers that popped into the workshop, dropping off handfuls of wood or grabbing as many of the giant caltrops as they could safely carry and emplacing them in the ditches for us. It allowed us to continue crafting without our work piling up around us. By the time the late afternoon had arrived, Jenkins and I got word that the second ditch had been appropriately filled with enough triboli to thwart even the most determined attacker from safely making it across. Grabbing a pair of shovels, we wasted no time in joining the rest of the village and digging out the final and longest stretch of our defenses. Despite needing to put the finishing touches on the second ditch, the rest of the village had made excellent progress today, largely in part to Drace's incredible strength and stamina. Working a line all by himself, he was able to carve through the earth like butter, tearing huge shovelfuls of dirt from the ground with every thrust. While not able to match Drace's speed, Halcyon was right beside Drace, waist deep into the ditch and working tirelessly without complaint.
I return.
Amaranth's voice echoed in my mind.
Amaranth!
I flinched at the unexpected voice that had been missing all day.
How was your day? Did you find anything interesting?
The many-legs spiders have begun to retreat to their old territory,
the cat replied.
Their numbers have been greatly diminished and should not pose a threat if they are culled frequently.
That's good news. It'll give us some breathing room. I sent back. Where did you patrol today? Any sign of the goblins or adventurers?
I returned to the lower ridge, then circled towards the rising sun,
Amaranth said.
I caught faint scents of goblins throughout the wood. However, it was stale and many nights old.
North and then east. I mentally made a note to try and teach Amaranth about compass directions when I had a chance.
That's unfortunate. I wonder where the goblins have hidden themselves. Are any of the others with you?
The dirty ones will be found. The hunter must be patient.
Amaranth spoke with a confident mental voice.
No, we divided our tasks today. The others proceeded riverward as I could cover more ground through the woods without them.
Did they say when they would return? I asked, after mentally converting riverward to mean south.
Before the sun set,
Amaranth replied quickly.
Hunger takes me, and I have spotted prey. I will return to the den shortly after feasting.
Happy to know that my familiar was capable and willing to fend for itself, I returned to digging. With the added hands today, it looked like there was a good chance of being able to finish the final ditch before the day was over. That left us with plenty of time tomorrow to craft the needed triboli to fill it. Fortunately, it wasn't much longer after I spoke to Amaranth that Sierra, Constantine, and Natasha returned from their day in the field. The sight of our scouts returning back safely was met with waves and cheers, quickly followed by a trio of outstretched shovels to help with the dig. With the extra help arriving and the ditch nearly completed, everyone quickly found a second wind, eager to finally be done with the hard work of digging and have the majority of the defenses completed. Sliding up beside us, Sierra and the others quickly filled us in on their day.
Not too much to report for the day today, Sierra began. We ranged about half a day's travel to the south and a bit to the east, mostly retracing the steps that we originally traveled to get to Aldford.
There's hardly any cover out that way, Constantine added as he dug. But it's also pretty easy ground to travel over. No sign of any adventures out that way so far.
Stronger predators are moving into that region, though, Sierra continued.
I don't know what changed in that area, but most creatures are in and around level 8 now, and we saw a handful of those level 10 wolverines Dreyse fought the other day, too.
Yeah, Constantine said in full agreement. We had a reasonably easy time of it, since we're well-leveled and decently geared, but unless the coming batch of adventurers are a hell of a lot more leveled than we're expecting, any that wander into that area are gonna regret it.
Happy to hear about that. I breathed a sigh of relief, knowing that we still had a bit of breathing room around the village.
Natasha also managed to reach her base class today, Constantine added, bringing the scout into the conversation.
Ah! She squeaked, hearing her name. I did! I am now a fully-fledged scout like Sierra. These two have been so wonderful in sharpening my skills. I had never thought I'd be able to progress so quickly.
That's great news, Natasha. I beamed with a smile. I'm happy you're fitting in so nicely here.
Me too,
she added with a shy smile as she continued to dig.
Have either of you seen Donovan today yet? I made a motion indicating the glowing tree at the heart of the village.
We did,
Sierra started to say with a shake of her head.
He's camped out under the tree, Constantine finished with a shrug. Found a table and chair from somewhere and dragged it out there, writing furiously.
He barely noticed us when we walked by, Natasha added with a shake of her head.
Is that unusual for him? I asked, remembering the Bond's words about House Daenerys, along with my own assessment of the man.
No, not really, Natasha admitted. He's always seemed driven by his work, and a little too focused at times.
He doesn't really seem like the type that should have been chosen to lead your expedition, I said bluntly.
I had thought the same thing, the young scout said with some embarrassment. But I didn't think it was my place to say anything. I was the least experienced novice in the expedition. I just focused on doing what I was told and tried to learn from some of the more experienced scouts.
I paused to think for a moment. Did anyone else step up to fill Donovan's gaps in leadership?
Well, the scoutmaster did his best. His name was... Bax Rafferty,
Natasha said with a sigh as she thought about her missing comrades.
But ultimately, the mages directed where the expedition went.
There were other mages? Constantine asked.
Yes, three, Natasha replied. They kept to themselves, really, constantly focused on all of their equipment and barely spoke to any of us. To be honest, they seemed rather agitated most of the time. I don't think their experiments were going that well.
Donovan mentioned the same thing, I confirmed, wondering if whatever agent House Daenerys deployed was one of the mages. Given her relative youth and inexperience, it was hard to suspect Natasha is filling that role. Would they have chosen a non-spellcaster to be an agent?
Amaranth mentioned that he smelled traces of goblin throughout the wood, I told Natasha. With any luck, we'll be able to track them down and see if we can find out what happened to the rest of the expedition.
Hopefully.
Natasha said softly.
We dug until the sun went down, everyone working tirelessly to have the final link of our defenses completed. As the distance shrank and space to work became tighter and tighter, a sense of eager anticipation arose as a handful of us worked to bring down the final patch of dirt. If someone tired, another was ready to step in and take their place. Unable to stand up to our determined effort, the final wall of dirt succumbed to our shovels, connecting the entirety of Aldford's defenses into one near-seamless piece, save for strategic patches of dirt that could be quickly used to enter and exit the village without having to wade through a sharpened wall of Triboli.
"We've done it!"
I called out to the crowd, being greeted by the enthusiastic cheers and applause of the gathered villagers.
"We have taken the first steps to ensuring the safety and prosperity of Aldford!" No longer will we be threatened by goblins or harassed by spiders, I continued. We will finally be able to sleep in peace, knowing that we can be safe in our own homes. You should all be proud at what we have accomplished here over the last few days.
Pausing for a moment, I looked around the cheering crowd, trying to make eye contact with as many people as I could.
Our work is not yet done, however. For we will have to prove that we have the strength to stand on our own, that we are a beacon of surety in these lands for all those who wish to live in peace.
I raised a fist up high.
In the coming days, other adventurers will begin arriving to Aldford and our surrounding territory.
Among those, there will be wicked and greedy hearts that will look upon our work and seek to steal it for themselves. By my word, their craven hands will find Aldford a thorny prize to grasp. But fear not, I assured the crowd. For every heart that holds malice, there will be two filled with virtue. Hearts that will understand and appreciate the hard work that we have put into the village. These are the souls that we will invite into our village to better strengthen us and to better strengthen Aldford against those who would wish it harm. Should any doubt of my words cross your mind, look upon the Spider Queen's skull, now mounted on the town hall wall.
I saw tired determination on the faces of the villagers as they nodded at my words. Having withstood both a goblin and spider attack in the same week, they were no longer unbloodied settlers staking a claim far from home. They were now pioneers, living on the very edge of a dangerous and uncharted frontier. On a primal level, they accepted it now, and were prepared to rise to any challenge put before them.
As for tonight, let us rest in the glory of a day's hard work, I called out, finishing my speech. I don't know about y'all, but I am certainly ready to sit down.
The crowd continued to cheer all the way to the town hall. Chapter 34 Sunday, February 10th, 2047, 6:21 a.m., Aldford.
Good morning, players. CTI would like to remind all long-term play players about the 10-day, 240-hour limit for continuous play. If you do not log out before you reach the playtime limit, you will be automatically logged out by the system. Minor playtime extensions may be granted by the system while in combat or engaged by a story event on an ad hoc basis. However, CTI encourages players to plan accordingly and to log out ahead of their playtime limit expiring to prevent any issues from occurring. Thank you and enjoy your time in Ascend Online. CTI Development Team.
The next morning found me in a grumpy mood as an impatient Sierra and Constantine dragged me out of bed early to have their armor repaired before they departed for the day again. Our earliest estimates had the adventurers arriving late today or by the end of the day tomorrow, which understandably had everyone more than a little nervous and short-tempered.
"We need to get moving, Lear,"
Constantine said impatiently as he progressively dressed himself in the gear that I'd managed to repair so far.
"Calm your shit,"
I snapped at the rogue, stripping a large piece of chitin from the armor I was working on. If you want me to move faster, then you should avoid getting yourself stabbed in the chest.
But I don't care.
I interrupted whatever Constantine was about to say. Go be useful and create me another mana-infused carapace.
Grr!
A sound of frustration escaped Constantine as he left to do as I had ordered.
You're headed off to the southeast today.
My clipped words came out as a statement rather than a question as I looked at Sierra.
Yeah.
Sierra nodded quickly, sensing that I wasn't overly amused at the moment.
There's quite a bit of ground we haven't covered yet.
If the adventurers have taken a direct path here, we'll hopefully be able to spot them.
And when we spot them,
Constantine added optimistically, placing the requested carapace on the workbench.
We'll have Amaranth and Sierra shadow the adventurers, with Natasha and myself coming back to warn the village.
Good. I stated, tying off the stitch I was working on and grabbing the carapace. We'll know where the both of you are via party sense, and once the adventurers get closer, Amaranth can give me real-time updates via our mental link.
What are we going to do then?
Sierra asked quietly. For all the planning that we had done so far, the adventurers' arrival to Aldford was one that we had no idea how to predict. There are just too many contingencies. We'll play it by ear. I said with a shake of my head. My gut could be wrong, and they may be happy to have a place to rest and relax. Or,
we'll run into an organized guild,
Constantine said with a sigh, echoing the worst-case scenario we could come up with. Our greatest fear was that one of the massive gaming syndicates would be knocking on our door.
Huge guilds with thousands of members, all choosing to start in the same location and follow their leaders to wherever they decided to set up shop. If something like that happened to Aldford, there was little we'd be able to do about it, even with the defenses we'd managed to create so far. Quantity has a quality all its own, I reminded myself of the old quote, hoping after everything we'd gone through we wouldn't just be overrun by sheer numbers. We'll manage as best we can, I told the both of them, tossing Constantine's fully repaired chest piece at him. Here, you're all patched up.
Thanks, Lear, Constantine said nervously.
No problem. I exhaled deeply as I tried to banish the stress that had steadily built up overnight. You'll both be great, and it'll all work out in the end. I know we're all a bit on edge today.
Yeah, Sierra agreed with a sigh. I haven't felt this stressed since I nearly slept through that exam back in university.
I think I remember that. Wasn't there a huge RPG game released around that time?
What was it called?
Constantine said while scratching his head.
That's gonna bug me all day now.
I don't even remember,
Sierra smiled, thinking back to the day.
I barely even remember what the exam was about now.
I chuckled, my nervousness bleeding away slightly.
All right, both your armors look in good shape.
Try not to be too hard on it today, if possible. These things are getting towards the end of their lifespan. Constantine barked a dry laugh as he slipped on his chest piece.
Something tells me that won't be up to us.
We shall see, I said softly as I motioned the group outside. Natasha and Amaranth were waiting outside in the cool air as we stepped outside the workshop. Natasha chewed on a piece of dried meat as she quickly ate her breakfast, giving us a wave when she saw us. Amaranth, in typical cat fashion, had curled himself into a ball, using a crate outside the workshop as a convenient perch as he dozed.
Is it time to begin the hunt?
Amaranth's eyes opened as we walked by. Looks like it, I told my familiar. Everyone's armor's fixed, and they're eager to be on their way.
Good.
The azure cat leaped off the crate and coiled its body into an arch as it stretched.
We depart.
Flicking an ear at Constantine in greeting, Amaranth set off, nudging Sierra's hip with his head as he passed, moving directly towards the nearest village exit.
Oof!
Sierra exclaimed as the giant feline knocked her elfin figure off stride.
Good morning to you too, you brute. I guess it's time to go,
Natasha said, wiping her face with the back of her hand, moving to follow the cat.
Have a good day, Lyrian.
I guess Amaranth is ready to go,
Constantine muttered under his breath as he waved goodbye to me.
Don't worry,
Sierra waved as she turned to follow the rest of the group.
If there are any adventurers in the area, we'll find them, before they find us.
I watched the group leave the village, biting my lip slightly as they vanished from sight. I finally began to understand the expression hurry up and wait that I heard people use before. Short of adding the last bit of tribbly to our defenses, everything else depended on what came down on us. Speaking of which, I probably should get started on those. I wasn't looking forward to another day filled with sharpening the spiked lengths of wood. With the items having long since become trivial for me to create, there weren't going to be any more skill increases for me to look forward to today. Maybe Jenkins will get a few people helping us craft them. I made a mental note to mention it to the man when I saw him this morning. So far, everything was quiet in Aldford, the majority of the villagers enjoying a morning to sleep in, as a reward for the amount of work we'd accomplished yesterday. I looked back at the workshop, debating with myself just how long I could afford to procrastinate before starting on the endless task of manufacturing tribbly. I sat down on a crate for a moment, appreciating the silent stillness of the village. Even if everything went perfectly over the next few days, this morning would probably be the last truly quiet day Aldford would see for a while. With any luck, the future would have friendly adventurers waking up early and getting ready for their day in the wild. The same would go for the merchants that I hoped would one day open shops here, along with all the other pieces that would come together once Aldford became a fully functioning town. Looking upwards, I spotted the azure-tinted oak tree once again,
its massive form stretching over 20 feet tall, easily the tallest feature in Aldford now, with no end to its growth in sight. Shit. When was the last time I saw Donovan? I struggled to remember if I'd seen the mage yesterday evening. Probably not since yesterday morning. I sighed, pushing myself off the crate and walking back towards the center of the town in search of Donovan. True to Constantine's words yesterday, I spotted a table pulled up beside the now massive base of the tree, covered in a heap of papers. Donovan and the rumored chair were nowhere to be seen. Scattered on top of the mess of papers and conveniently doubling as a paperweight was a thick, intricately engraved iron rod. A quick glance at the rod prompted a tag to appear, informing me that it was an etherscope. Picking the item up in one hand while holding the papers down with the other, I felt the faintest tingle of energy while grabbing the etherscope. As I examined the engravings on the cool rod, I started to feel a faint tugging motion in my hand as the rod began to nudge itself towards the oak tree. Huh. Maybe some sort of magical dowsing rod? I thought to myself. I guess that could be somewhat useful. The etherscope was pointing directly at the tree when I felt it begin to tug harder in my hand, moving downwards towards the base of the tree, until it was pointing nearly straight down into the ground. That's where all the ichor was spilled when the Webwood Horror exploded. I frowned as the etherscope began to vibrate in my hand.
What the hell is this thing doing?
Curious as to what could be causing the etherscope to react so strangely, I activated True Sight, gazing towards the ground. My vision brightened, my newly augmented ability cutting through the dark shadows cast by the rising sun. But it did not stop there. Thick, vibrant white lines appeared in the ground around me, causing me to flinch in surprise. The longer I held the etherscope, the more lines I saw, the range I could perceive the lines increasing gradually, second by second. Are those roots? My eyes opened even wider as I stared at the ground, tracing the lines through the earth. There were hundreds, maybe even thousands of the roots, burrowing far into the ground, far deeper than the tree was tall. The further away the roots descended, the more of an azure tinge the roots acquired. Shit! What is that? At the edge of my vision, a faint, deep blue vein of energy appeared, running from the east and then curving to the northwest, flowing so slowly that I could barely perceive it. I knelt down to the ground as if the short distance would be enough to change what I saw. It was then I noticed the acrid smell of burning flesh, quickly followed by blinding pain in my hand. Shit! I yelled, dropping the now red-hot etherscope from my hand, instinctively deactivating my True Sight. The second it struck the ground, it began to smolder, sending up smoke as it burnt through the grass surrounding the tree.
Ah, what the fuck?
My stomach roiled as I looked down at the charred mess of my palm. Had I still relied on food for nourishment, I was pretty sure I'd have thrown up from the sight. Sucking in a deep breath, I closed my eyes as the pain peaked. Then, thankfully, it began to fade. A quick glance had shown me losing a full 10% of my health from clutching the searing rod.
What the hell just happened?
A sleepy voice greeted my ears, followed by a crash. I heard some scrambling on the ground before footsteps came rushing around the tree.
Lyrian, what happened?
I opened my eyes to see a disheveled Donovan standing over me.
Your etherscope fucking burnt my hand to the bone is what happened. What?
The mage sounded concerned. Whether it was for me or the etherscope, I couldn't tell.
It's not supposed to do that.
Donovan spotted the thing lying on the ground nearby in a patch of smoldering grass. He waved a hand over it, testing the temperature, before gingerly picking it up.
It's cold now. Tell me what happened.
My voice caught as I tried to flex my hand, sending shooting pains through it as the regenerating pink skin cracked under movement.
I came to check up on you, but didn't see you nearby. I fell asleep in the chair.
Donovan indicated a nearby chair that was on its side.
I was just on the other side of the tree. Fuck!
I shook my head. With how quickly this tree had grown, the simple thought to check on the other side of it hadn't even crossed my mind. I took another deep breath and continued talking.
I saw the etherscope lying on the table and was curious to what it was. Once I had picked it up, it pointed itself at the tree first, then the ground. At that point, I activated my arcane sight.
So you saw the root system?
Donovan nodded expectantly, not knowing that I had mentioned the old version of my skill.
That shouldn't have caused the rod to overheat.
I saw more than that, I told Donovan, explaining the change in color of the root and the massive blue-tinted river of energy beneath us.
You saw what?
Donovan practically leaped out of his skin as he absorbed my statement.
How? Even with the etherscope, you should not have been able to see so far.
What do you mean, even with the etherscope? I shot back at Donovan. I don't even know what the etherscope does.
What? Why did you even touch it, then?
Donovan hissed back in surprise.
Normally, they aren't dangerous, except possibly as a club, but gods, you've proven that wrong.
I get it, Donovan, I replied acidly. I was an idiot and touched something magical I didn't fully understand. It's not the first time that's happened, and likely not the last. Now tell me, what does an etherscope do? Donovan took a deep breath, his face coloring like he was about to tear a strip off my hide. But he caught himself and exhaled, muttering under his breath,
like a babe in a naphtha factory playing with matches.
He looked at me for a moment before beginning to explain.
An etherscope is a device that is able to detect major sources of magic nearby, as well as enhance the detection range of our arcane sight's ability to perceive magic. Depending on the distance, the etherscope will also shade any magic it perceives in shades, ranging from white for the closest auras to a dark blue for the furthest. It was primarily used for reconnaissance during the war, to maintain a watch for magic-oriented attacks. However, we have repurposed it for our expedition, not that it did us much good, all things considered.
How far does it extend your vision? I asked, after taking a moment to absorb Donovan's information about the etherscope.
500 meters, in all cases, since we've begun designing them, Donovan stated. How you saw further is a mystery to me.
I think it has to do with my fall into the ley line, I told Donovan vaguely. I have felt more in tune with magic since I emerged.
Perhaps that has granted you a better sensitivity,
Donovan conceded thoughtfully,
though I am loath to try and replicate such a gift.
Anyway, the mage continued,
you were saying that you saw a massive river of energy beneath us.
I did, I said with a nod. I think it is a portion of the ley line. It was extremely faint. Donovan nodded excitedly, as if he suspected that all along.
Likely, that is what burnt the rod from your hand. It was never designed to withstand detecting such power. A good thing to know for the future.
I'm glad nearly charring my hand to ash was of some help. I flexed my hand a second time, feeling less pain as it had nearly healed itself. If that happened in real life, I'd have lost my hand.
Perhaps it will teach you not to touch things you don't understand,
Donovan replied sagely. Doubt it, I grunted as I stood up and indicated the tree. The roots that I saw were growing straight down towards the ley line. They had a fair distance to go, but not much longer, I'd say.
Are you certain?
Donovan asked, looking towards the glowing tree, still cradling the etherscope that I'd dropped. Certain enough that I don't want to check again, I indicated the rod. Should we be concerned if the tree reaches the ley line?
Eh? I have no idea. This is new ground to me,
Donovan admitted with a shrug.
I have no frame of reference for such magic.
Great, I replied with a sigh, looking up at the tree.
All I can say with confidence, Donovan said softly, is that when this tree touches the ley line, it's likely to get much larger.
Fantastic. After my rather pointed lesson in the value of keeping my hands to myself, I returned to the workshop, content to stick to the task of crafting the needed triboli to complete our defenses. At the very least, the pointy lengths of wood wouldn't spontaneously catch fire on me if I gripped them too tightly. I really need to figure out the rules of magic in this world, along with 10,000 other things.
My mind spiraled as I tried to assess everything I had learned about Ascend Online over the last week. Even a week into the game, and I have yet to scratch the surface of what this world has to offer. If only I had a few more days to catch my breath and find my footing. I felt like a drowning man trying to keep his head above water, as the responsibility for the defense and development of Aldford began to weigh on me. I had never expected to be in a position of such responsibility when I'd first logged onto this world. Now here I was, quite literally preparing for a war I might have no chance in winning, about to land on my doorstep. Even if everything worked out flawlessly, the weight and pressure on me would only increase, the impending adventures merely being the leading tip of the challenges facing us. Aldford would become the focal point of everyone turning their gaze to the frontier, if only for its strategic location as a safe haven. Adding on to all of that, if I wished to truly secure the area, I would have to follow through on the Bond's advice, potentially pitting myself against an ex-queen and putting myself into a world of politics I knew nothing about. I think I know why most political leaders have gray hair now. I found myself constantly taking deep breaths, trying to calm my hammering heart before it leaps straight out of my chest. I wonder if I can somehow put this on my resume. Led virtual village and all inhabitants to destruction. Experienced in biting off more than one can chew. Ability to repeatedly touch strange and unknown magical artifacts without proper safety precautions.
Varian, are you okay?
Jenkins's voice cut my spiraling thoughts off. Hmm? I looked up at Jenkins's unexpected question. Yeah, I'm okay.
Are you sure?
His eyes dropped down to the triboli I was working on. Huh? I turned the wooden caltrop around to see that I had tied a hammer in place of one of the wooden spikes. Oh.
I think you need a break,
Jenkins said gently, taking the triboli from my hands. But,
Lyrian? You've made close to 50 of these in the last couple of hours alone. The rest of us have barely made 25 each in that time.
Jenkins soothed me as he waved to a handful of helpers nearby.
Take a break. We'll be able to finish the rest by lunchtime.
Sorry. I let a deep breath out. Bit nervous today.
I know what you mean,
Jenkins said sympathetically.
Take some time to wind down and let the day work itself out. Don't stress yourself out.
Thanks, Jenkins. I think I'll do that. I felt my heart flutter a bit as I stood up. Maybe a bit of a walk will soothe my nerves. I left the workshop in a bit of a daze, losing myself in thought once again. Walking through the village, I sensed an underlying current of anxiety. I spotted a handful of nervous villagers focused on relentlessly cleaning and sharpening tools past the point of reason. Gleaming pitchforks, knives, and spades all rested in a line as if they would have to be picked up at a moment's notice to repel invaders. Others dealt with their stress in a more traditional way, simply by burying themselves in whatever work they could find. Clenching my hand at the memory of the burning etherscope, I saw Halcyon talking animatedly with Donovan while cutting through the center of the village, both of them so deep into a conversation about magical theory that they didn't notice me pass by. I gradually circled the village, double-checking the ditch that we had dug out around the village. Seeing the defenses soothed my heart, realizing how imposing they would look from the other side. Anyone bearing ill intent would have to ford their way across the river, scramble across nearly 4 feet of triboli, and then claw their way up a 5-foot berm of dirt to get into the village proper. A task that would only get more difficult once the ground became soaked with water and blood. My feet slowly led me towards the militia yard, where I saw Aldwyn, Caius, and Drace sparring with one another.
Hey, Lear!
Drace greeted me with a wave as Caius and the Bond faced off hand to hand.
You guys finished already?
Not quite yet, I replied with a shake of my head. Nerves have been getting the better of me. Jenkins decided it'd be best for me to take a bit of a break.
I know what you mean,
Drace said with a sigh.
I've been nervously excited all morning long so far.
Huh, I think that's an apt description. It felt good to laugh and have some of the stress bleed away. I cocked my head towards Aldwyn and Caius, still sparring with one another.
So you guys just tendering Caius up today?
If anything, I'd say Caius is tendering us up now.
Trace chuckled, a grin spreading across his face.
He's learning fast, and I doubt he'll have any problems with his touch attacks now.
Perfect. I was happy to hear that Caius was progressing well. I could only imagine how frustrating Friday had been for him, trying to keep up with the rather nimble spiders.
Alduin is just showing him a few pointers for his hand-to-hand work, and teaching him a few abilities.
Abilities? I asked curiously. Which ones?
Nothing too crazy. Just shoulder tackle and kick,
Trace explained.
Good for getting some quick distance between you and an enemy, or disrupting an attack. I use them all the time.
Shit, I saw those available to me when I hit level 10, I exclaimed, stepping closer to Trace. When did you learn them? Can you teach me? Trace's eyes opened wide at my sudden flurry of energy.
Yeah, calm down. Alduin taught me the shoulder tackle maneuver yesterday, and I just picked up kick back on Friday while we were dealing with the spiders. Surprised you haven't learned it already, actually.
I tend to lean more towards punching things rather than kicking them. I began stripping my tunic off as I motioned towards an unused part of the practice field. Mind if I work on alteration, too? My mana takes a bit more time to regenerate now.
Hmm? Yeah, that's no problem, man,
Trace answered, waving the question away as he followed me onto the field.
Wish we had a few days to do nothing but catch up on skills. My skills are everywhere.
Fuck, don't you know it. I was in full agreement with Drace. So how do you want to start? The warrior paused as he looked thoughtfully at me.
Let's start with kick first.
I gave Drace a thumbs up, motioning for him to proceed.
So, the first thing you have to do is make sure that your non-kicking leg is planted firmly into the ground,
Drace began to explain as he indicated his left leg.
When you kick, you're going to want to kick through your target like you're trying to break a door down.
Lyrian!
Natasha's breathless voice echoed through the air as she jogged towards us.
We found them!
Constantine added, quickly following on Natasha's heels.
3 or 4 hours out from Aldford.
Finally. Alduin, Caius, Drace, and I had spent the entire afternoon sparring under the hot sun, each of us trying to work past the crushing stress that gripped our hearts. The handful of skill increases in unarmed combat and alteration helped take the edge off the stress, but a single careless thought would bring it crashing back down.
What are we dealing with?
I asked, my mouth suddenly dry. Is it bad?
I don't know.
Constantine shook his head with a grimace. Not our worst-case scenario, but not good either. It looks complicated. Better yet, fucking complicated.
Great.
I let out a deep breath, feeling the stress in my stomach curdle into nausea. Beside me, I could see Alduin, Caius, and Drace visibly tense, too. How many are there?
In total, we have a little over 100 adventurers coming our way. My guess is around 130 or so. They definitely know without a doubt Aldford is out here,
Constantine started to explain.
Thing is, I think that the adventurers have split into different factions within the group and that it's not all happy within their camp.
What do you mean? I asked Constantine. A divided camp between the adventurers would certainly make our problems easier to bear.
Well, we've noticed that there are 3 different groups within the adventurers' ranks,
Constantine explained.
First, there's a rather well-equipped group of about 50 that are obviously running the show. They're all wearing leather armor with decent-looking weapons. Their primary job seems to be to keep any roaming creatures off the group.
The second group,
Natasha chimed in, taking over for Constantine,
seems to be a go-between, between the first and third group, roughly 20 of them. They show quite a bit of deference to the better-equipped group while treating the third group like, well, prisoners.
Which is what I think the third group are, Constantine said softly. At first glance, both the second group and the third group are roughly geared the same way, in the same sort of threadbare clothing we all started in. But damned if the third group looks rough. Just in the time we were watching, we saw a handful of stragglers beaten for falling behind the group. I don't know why they're doing it, but it's definitely been brutal.
I don't understand, I hissed, slowly shaking my head. Why bother with prisoners, especially if they're adventurers? I'm not saying it's the best option, but why not just kill them and have them respawn back in Iberia? It'd be loads easier than dragging them along and torturing them.
I don't know, Lear, but on top of all that, almost all in the third group are walking wounded, which means that they haven't eaten in at least a day, Constantine continued. There are quite a few that are actually being carried by others, simply because their wounds won't allow them to walk.
Fuck, Caius spat. They're intentionally keeping them weak.
Did you notice any leaders in the mess? Trace asked, nodding at Caius.
Not too sure, Constantine answered with a shake of his head. Soon as we had a decent count and direction of travel, we decided to head back and report.
Sierra said that she and Amaranth would keep pace with the adventurers,
Natasha said, cocking her head towards the south.
We have plenty of time to get ready for them.
Okay.
I exhaled another deep breath, feeling the stress bleeding away now that the moment of truth had arrived. I looked around at everyone, finding them all looking back at me. If they're dragging that many prisoners, I think it's safe to assume that they're not coming here in peace. Inform the villagers and make sure everyone has something sharp or heavy on hand, I began to call out orders. Split anyone able and willing to swing a weapon along the defenses inside the village. Those who can't, have them hunker down in the town hall. Make sure that there are a pair of militiamen to anchor each side of the village. Jenkins and Shelia can decide for themselves where they need to be. I motioned for everyone to start following me back to the heart of the village. Alduin, Caius, Trace, Halcyon, and I will meet them outside the village on the other side of the river. Until we can figure them out, I don't want them any closer to Aldford than they need to be.
Where do you want us? Constantine asked, indicating Natasha and himself.
Back out in the field, I replied. See if you can meet up with Sierra and Amaranth again. I want the both of you covering our flanks. If they send out any scouts to flank us, I want to know.
And if they attack us? Constantine spoke softly. Or look like they'll attack Aldford?
I turned my head to look at Constantine, steel in my eyes. Then kill them.
Chapter 35. It only took an hour for Aldford to ready itself for war. Weapons and sharpened tools were passed out to grim-faced villagers, each taking positions along the village perimeter. We checked and rechecked the tribally filling our defenses, reaffirming our confidence that none could pass without paying a heavy price in blood. Instructions were given, with various contingencies depending on the situation. Everyone knew what was expected of them. All that was left to do was wait. Standing under a pair of tall, widely branched trees just outside of Aldford, the five of us watched the sun trace across the sky as it began its inevitable descent on the western horizon. Closing my eyes, I could sense Constantine flanking outward to the east, with Sierra and Amaranth doing the same in the west.
I see them!
Alduin was the first to break the silence as he pointed.
There, coming around that distant batch of trees.
Eagerly, we all followed his gaze. From this far out, the adventurers appeared to be just a single blob moving in the distance. The blob slowly grew larger as the distance shrank, becoming somewhat more distinct.
Three of the interlopers have broken off towards us.
Amaranth's cool mental voice could not fully conceal his impending excitement.
They glide ineptly through the wood, playing at being hunters.
Where are they going? I sent back to Amaranth, signaling the others to walk out from the trees. My plan was to meet them in full view of Aldford, close enough for us to be able to escape behind our defenses if we needed to, but far enough away that they wouldn't be able to actively threaten the village. At least not until they fully declared their intentions.
They speed through the wood, seeking the den's flank.
I could feel Amaranth quickly moving in the distance as he and Sierra paced the scouting adventurers. I felt Constantine's presence begin to move in the distance as well, and assumed that he too was tracking another set of scouts.
Shall we end them?
Not yet, I sent back. Let them get closer and make the first move.
My familiar closed the link with a mental acknowledgement, leaving us watching the mass of adventurers slowly begin to sharpen into distinct humanoid shapes. "Amaranth tells me they've sent out scouts to flank us," I told the group. "They're keeping track of them right now, but won't hit them unless they're a threat."
"Good,"
Alduin replied somewhat uneasily as he watched the advancing horde.
"Gods, there are so many of them. We would have been caught completely unaware."
"I expected more," Caius whispered softly. "100 or so isn't that bad."
"Probably easier places to go much closer than here," Halcyon suggested.
"Too bad the majority of them are likely assholes," Drace said pessimistically.
"This is far enough," I spoke confidently to the group, motioning for us to stop. There was no way that the arriving adventurers would miss us where we stood. Our presence here was a challenge. They would have no choice but to approach us if they wanted to get any closer to Aldford.
"Game faces on, everyone."
We watched the approaching horde grind to a halt, a bowshot away from us, milling about as their ranks came to a halt. Looking closely at the first few rows of adventurers that I could make out from this distance, my eyes easily picked out a number of different races from within the crowd. All the common races were thoroughly represented, humans, elves, dwarves, along with countless half-breeds of every kind imaginable. I caught the sight of a handful of feline, lupine, and saurian races intermixed throughout the crowd, bringing an exotic touch to the travel-worn mass. A few other feathered or furred races stood out, but at the moment I had no frame of reference to what they may be. The longer I watched the group, the more details my eyes drew out. Echoing Constantine's earlier observations, I quickly noted the differences between the two groups of poorly geared adventurers. Some merely looking dirty and ragged, while others wore scraps of cloth that could barely even be considered clothes anymore, dried blood evident on the few scraps that remained. I could feel the weight of their hungry eyes as they watched us, afraid to make a move but unwilling to back down after such a long journey. It was a crowd driven by momentum more than anything else, and now that they had come to a stop, they looked around aimlessly, unsure of what to do. As the adventurers settled, my attention focused on the armored adventurers that gradually appeared at the head of the crowd. All of them wearing matching sets of tan-colored leather armor, covering everything except their heads. A row of adventurers parted ahead of me, a brightly armored human striding confidently out towards us, immediately standing out from all the other adventurers. Even from this far away, I could see his armor glitter in the fading sunlight. His long black hair billowed in the wind as he walked towards us, the leather-clad adventurers falling in line behind him. As he approached and his features sharpened in my vision, I revised my earlier guess, marking him as a half-human of some sort. His skin was far too unnaturally pale to be either a human or an elf, and I noted that he lacked the typical pointed ears elvenkind normally had.
"What are you?"
I kept my face impassive as the armor-clad man approached, watching him intently. On closer inspection, I could now see that the armor was a finely crafted suit of antique-looking chainmail, made in a style that my mind couldn't quite recognize. A rather ornate-looking sword, complete with jewels stuck in the hilt, hung at his waist. The man rested his hand on the pommel of the blade as he and his entourage stopped a short distance away from us.
"And why are you dragging so many prisoners with you?"
The man's gaze silently measured us, his eerily gray eyes roaming over our weapons and armor before focusing on Aldford nearby. 7 leather-clad adventurers stopped an arm's length behind the man, my gaze shifting momentarily to identify the motley group as being a pair of half-orcs, a trio of humans, an elf, and a dwarf.
"Well... fuck."
The man frowned as he looked at us, his eyes carefully looking at our faces.
"This is an annoying surprise."
Nice to meet you too." I frowned, looking at the adventurer standing in front of us, caught a bit off guard. Out of everything that the man could have greeted us with, I didn't expect him to simply curse at us as if he spilled a glass of milk.
"In other circumstances, it might have been,"
The man exhaled with a huff, shaking his head. The rest of his entourage carried hard looks on their faces as they carefully assessed us, unsure of what kind of threat we posed.
I'm guessing you guys either have Isaac, Killian, and the others tied up somewhere in that village, or you killed them and they're back in Iberia.
I felt Dre stiffen beside me and let out a short laugh that echoed through the air. Those were your guys? Halcyon and Caius couldn't help but echo Dre's chuckle.
Isaac, Killian, and the others are all dead, likely in an Iberian prison, too,
Dre said bluntly, not bothering to keep the acid out of his voice.
They got a little uppity with us, killed a pair of guards. There was some fire involved. In the end, it turns out Isaac can definitely not fly.
Those must have been the adventurers they encountered on their way here, I noted, remembering the shortcut they took to climb up the ridge and the subsequent fight at the lift system that had been still under construction.
Knowing them, I can't say I really blame you. They can be rather excessive at times.
The dark-haired man ground out slowly with a sigh.
What's done is done. Unfortunately, though, that might make this next part a bit of a pain.
How about we take a step back, I said, watching the man carefully, and you tell us who you are and what it is exactly that you want.
You're right.
The man nodded in agreement.
There is no reason to lose our civility. You can call me Graves.
Graves made no move to introduce the guards beside him, an awkward pause filling the air before we caught on and introduced ourselves. Even as I focused my attention on the adventurers behind Graves, the game world didn't supply any identifying tags to who they may be.
A pleasure to meet you all.
Graves slightly inclined his head in greeting, then focused his gaze on Aldford in the distance.
As for what I want, I think that's pretty obvious.
Well, at least he's straight to the point. And I think that with us standing here, you should realize that we're not going to give it up that easily, I replied slowly, looking directly into Graves' gray eyes.
Of course, Graves nodded understandably. I wouldn't do anything different were I in your shoes either, at least not without significant recompense.
You've just met us, and now you want to bribe us?
Halcyon exclaimed incredulously.
To just step aside and let you take Aldford?
Calling it a bribe would be a rather rude way of describing the generous offer I'm willing to extend.
Graves began to pace in front of his men, inspecting us intently.
Judging by your equipment, along with the fact that you took care of Isaac and his group, tells me that you're all rather decent players. Ones I'd rather have on my side than against me. So, instead of us wasting energy fighting against one another, I would instead prefer to recruit you, Graves stated. There are other events, closer to Iberia, which are currently attracting the majority of the other Iberian adventurers' attention. If we work together, we can solidify our power in this region before more start heading out this way.
I suddenly get the feeling that we're not the first ones to hear this pitch. My jaw clenched as my eyes flicked towards the larger group of adventurers, only to see that more of the armor-clad followers had moved to the front of the group. As great as you may think that offer is, I replied, looking at Graves, what exactly is in it for us? From where I'm standing, it looks like we're going to be selling all our hard work pretty damn cheap.
You mean aside from us simply storming the village and taking it from you?
Graves said coolly, resting his hand on the hilt of his sword. Yeah. Aside from that, I stared Graves in the eye, unwilling to be intimidated in such a manner. Eyes boring into me, Graves stared at me silently as he tried to gauge the depth of my resolve, his guards standing behind him doing their best to look intimidating.
You've got spine,
Graves admitted after a moment, a grudging tone of respect in his voice. He glanced briefly at his guards behind him, some unspoken communication passing between them.
Very well. I suppose I could tell you what my vision for this land is. A few days ago, Graves began, I happened to